All right, everybody, welcome. Thanks for joining us. And I'll give you a quick heads up. The first hour is going to be Destination Health. Second hour will be Anything Goes. We'll answer any questions. If we happen to have Destination Health questions we don't get to in the first hour, I'll take them in the second. I will tell you right now that calls and questions are really, really light. So we may not get to a second hour today. It just depends on you. So this would be your chance. Calls are starting to roll in, but they're still light. Questions are very light. So if you have questions, press 1 on your phone right now. I guarantee we'll get to you. And we'll just play it by ear today. When we run out of questions, we'll stop. But if you want to get through right now, especially with Destination Health questions, you can do that by pressing 1 on your phone. We're going to go ahead and get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to our world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. My co-host, Kim Cockerham. Tonight is Destination Health. The website is letstruck.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Look for Destination Health. And this is the show where we take your calls and answer your questions about everything health, fitness, training, endurance, diet, nutrition, drugs, doctors, diseases, you name it. We'll tackle it here on this show. Pick up the phone, ask the question. We'll do our best to get you an answer. And we wrap it all around that trucking lifestyle. We know that staying healthy in today's world is getting more and more difficult all the time, and it's even more difficult when you live and work in a truck. But just because it's difficult doesn't mean it isn't something you should be paying attention to and focusing on. Just looking at the news recently, what's going on with government regulations, you can fully expect. Now, it seems like if we believe the statistics that I can find, since 2014, like less than 2 years, we have lost 150,000 drivers because of medical reasons. Now, all that really tells me, 2014 is when they changed the requirements on who could do a DOT physical. So I don't think 150,000 more drivers got sick that quickly. I think that we had a lot of drivers who were able to get by because they had a doctor who would pencil whip the physical. And that's getting much more difficult to be able to find now. So you're actually going to need to be healthy enough to at least pass the DOT physical. Now, let's be real. And let's be honest, because that's what this show is about, just getting real. And passing the DOT physical is the very bottom level of, I don't even want to say it's what you can, the bottom level of what you can call healthy. It's not. You can be extremely unhealthy and pass that physical. So your first priority needs to be passing that physical, because you need to be able to keep your CDL and make a living. But you should be going much, much further in that when it comes to your health and your fitness. And the good news is, once you know how, once you get past all the garbage, it's not that difficult. It's really not. It requires doing some things differently, but it's not as difficult as we've been led to believe. It's just everything about the system is stacked against us. So I've got some things I want to open. Kim is joining me right now. Kim, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I've got some things today. I know you've got a big announcement. Why don't we start with that?
Oh, sure. And I loved your opening, because It's so true. There's so much. It's so sad, first of all, to hear about, you know, losing drivers and that. But, and you were talking about the DOT physical. I think what we found with the community here that's come together and that's changed the way they're living and eating, it goes, they're finding a way of life that they haven't experienced for a long time because their new normal was feeling miserable. And I love hearing from people with the few changes that they can do, this new excitement for life and feeling good and stuff that they've experienced. So,
yeah,
it's just exciting. So, yeah, so I get to share this now. I'm so excited.
Yes.
So, you know, everybody knows the CMC is just our premier event, and, you know, it's so much about improving business, and I'm so grateful now, too, that we address health because it's so important, and it's just all-encompassing, and it's kind of, you know, same goal setting you do for business and stuff we do for health as well and learning, and so, you know, we always bring in speakers that touch the different aspects of the business from Kevin Woodall, you do, and bringing in George for negotiations and having our partners there, and now we're just really excited, and Kevin, this goes back to you because I believe whenever people call into the show, or they would call us on the support line just looking for resources and stuff. One of the number one books that you shared with them was Keto Clarity by Jimmy Moore. And he really does in that book breakdown. And it's cool because he's, you know, we read so much from doctors and that, and Jimmy isn't a doctor, but he's lived this life, the ketogenic life, and turned his life around. What's pretty neat is he's surrounded himself now with these doctors and everything that he brings to the masses, you know, and I think that's what it is. You surround yourself with people, like-minded people, you go search for the answers, and so he's surrounded himself with that and brought it to all of us. And so he's the author of Keto Clarity and Cholesterol Clarity that we talk about on the show a lot, and then also a cookbook with that Maria Emmerich that I know you enjoy, her website and blog and so forth as well. He's got a cookbook. So Jimmy is going to be coming to the CMC and being one of our speakers on Tuesday evening, and a special session in the evening that we're going to be able to learn from him and ask him questions. And I just think it's great when we have, you know, all the information that you're learning and bringing with us, and we just keep building on that and sharing more and more. So I am so excited. He is so excited when he learned about CMC and about all the drivers and, you know, the show here and all the drivers that come together to add some value to everything we're all working together on.
Well, that is exciting, and thank you for spearheading that and getting it done. And, you know, I'm not counting books anymore. My goal last year was to read 100 during last year, and I exceeded that, and I'm over 100 now. And that's just health, fitness, nutrition, drugs, disease, everything, you know, that we would address on the show. And out of all of those books, if I had to pick one author or one book that fits the CMC best, it's Jimmy's book and his resources, mm-hmm. his podcast and his blog and the connections he's made. And for a couple reasons, you touched on it. Most of the books I read were either written by a doctor, which is good. You want somebody that has that background and has the research ability and the knowledge. So most of the books were written by doctors. Some were written by nutritionists and people who were very, very into fitness already and then maybe switched over to being fat adapted but you know, that's very different. When you've been into fitness your whole life, that's different than most people we're dealing with on the show. So those were what a lot of the authors had, those really strong backgrounds, either in health, medical, nutrition, training, things like that. And that's good. But Jimmy started from where many of our drivers are, struggling with a lot of health issues and being overweight and not being into fitness and training and, you know, a healthy diet. And he started from a very bad place, and he had been through all kinds of other diets that would work for a while and then not work. And he said even when he lost weight on a lot of other diets, he didn't feel good. You know, we focus on weight loss and we see people, you know, the biggest loser, or, you know, it's in our face now, and we see people that lose all this weight, But a lot of times their quality of life isn't addressed. You know, if you lose a lot of weight, obviously it's good for your health, but if you still don't feel good and you're still sick all the time, then, you know, that's not enough. Just to lose weight can't be our only criteria. It can certainly be a criteria. But I know people who, by today's standards, are overweight or obese and are very healthy and happy and they feel good. I think, if anything, I'd rather be that than, you know, the ideal weight but sick and not feel good all the time. And I think Jimmy can relate with where a lot of our drivers are coming from, starting in a very bad place and having to make some big changes in health. And he has put more effort into this than anybody I know, as far as interviewing doctors. And doesn't he have over 1,000 podcast shows?
Yeah, he really does.
Yeah,
and now Periscope and stuff too. And yeah, it's very, very cool.
Yeah. So thanks again for getting that done and having him come and join us. And that is very exciting. And there were a couple other topics I wanted to talk about to open the show today, and then we'll get to some questions. And one of them, we've talked a little bit about it before, but I've been doing some more reading and there's some new numbers out. I wanted to talk about statins. And before I do that, if anybody asked me about cholesterol and where to start, I recommend Jimmy's other book, Cholesterol Clarity. You know, he's not a doctor, but the way he writes his books, there's usually like 15 to 30 doctors or researchers involved in the book. So he's kind of like the ringmaster, and he gets all the experts in and gets a lot of different opinions. And I think it makes for a great book. So statins and cholesterol go hand in hand. The book Cholesterol Clarity is excellent. We're going to talk about that a little bit when I get back. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. My co-host is Kim Cockerham. This is Destination Health. Kim, I wanted to talk a little bit about statins because some new numbers came out, and the American Heart Association just made a change as well. Do you realize of Americans over 45 years old that 1 in 4 are now on statins?
Wow, that's scary.
1 in 4, that's insane. They are the single best-selling class of drugs in the world, and yet there's not a whole lot of evidence that they do much of anything other than lower cholesterol. And some people would say, well, isn't that the point? No, it's not. The point is not to lower cholesterol. Cholesterol is just a number. Our body needs cholesterol. We can't even agree on how we should be measuring cholesterol. The point is not to lower cholesterol. And if I stop there, then a lot of people are wondering, what is the point? The point is not to have a heart attack and die. That's what the point is. Now, I don't care if my cholesterol is 600. If I don't have a heart attack and I don't die and I feel good, I don't care what that number is. And there's no proof really anywhere that taking a statin, and yes, it will lower your cholesterol, but there's no proof anywhere that it prevents a heart attack or stops you from dying. So why would we have so many people on them?
Yeah, I think to me, when people go and you get that report back that it's high and you need to do this, we just do it. And then once you're on it, do people even get off of those once they're on?
We've had people here get off. Yeah, but it's hard.
Okay.
And a lot of times you virtually have to fire your doctor. And this is where the whole system is set up to do one thing. The whole system is set up to sell drugs. That is what our medical system has become. And I mentioned the change from the American Heart Association. They have an online calculator. And you go in and you put in your age and your cholesterol numbers and, you know, whether or not you have diabetes, if you've ever had a stroke. It's pretty quick. If you know your cholesterol numbers, you could fill it out in 30 seconds and it calculates your risk of heart disease in the next 10 years. Now, how the hell do we know that this calculator is accurate? It's really not. You wouldn't know unless you do a lot of research into what goes into this, which I've done. But what they've done now is it used to be if you would show up as a 15% risk or more in the next 10 years, based on their calculator, they would recommend you would be on a statin. Now they've lowered it to 10%. Nothing else changed. They just lowered their number. And when they do that, they just created a 500,000 new customers, or probably 10 million new customers. Because before, if you had a percentage of 12, 13, 14, you wouldn't take a statin. Now all of a sudden you would. What changed? There's no new proof that statins are doing anybody any good. In fact, there's a lot of proof that they're hurting a lot of people. And yet we lower the threshold where they get recorded. Now, this is scary. Just going to the doctor puts you at risk. Because if the doctor sees these numbers, he is required to prescribe you a statin. Not talk about diet, not talk about any other lifestyle changes, just prescribe a statin. And if he doesn't, his license is at risk. The doctor doesn't even get to use any judgment anymore. Mm. Yeah.
That's sad. That's sad. And that's where us, I think, as consumers and, you know, educate people. And I think that's what everybody here is doing better and better at. I know I am, is getting a little bit more educated, feeling more empowered with my health, that I would absolutely hope that I would, that one thing that the doctor itself, if they're not willing to work with you on a nutritional side, whether their hands are tied or not, you got to look for somewhere else. It's sad. It's sad. I think we also have to take responsibility for that too, what we've done with insurance, you know, and housing this, where the doctors, they're afraid, you know, they're afraid to not do this stuff. So
they are. Well, I have some other things I wanted to say about statins, but I do want to make sure we get to all the calls and questions. So what do you say we go take some?
That sounds great.
Let's start off in Wyoming. Karen, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kim and Kevin.
Hi, Kim.
I've got a question about the immune system. It seems since I started the grain-free and doing the keto bit, that I'm not as healthy in my immune system. I've gotten sicker this year. It takes longer to get rid of the bugs. I land up having to go to the doctor over it. And it's just not me. It's, you know, a few other people that are in a group that I'm involved in, that we all seem to, you know, not be as immune healthy anymore.
So let's talk about that, because that's an important factor. And if anything, following a correct ketogenic diet should improve that tremendously. And when it doesn't, we need to figure out why not. Because I do have, you know, you say there's a couple people who are experiencing this. Most people, it's the exact opposite. I mean, the calls we get here, people say they feel great. They were around a whole bunch of sick people. They're not getting sick. They used to have, you know, seasonal colds and allergies, and those are gone. That's more of what we would expect. And and there are some really clear reasons why, and I'll go over those, and then we maybe can identify where things are going wrong. So let's skip ketogenic or diets of any kind for a second. Talk about the immune system itself. It lives in your gut. It is, you know, we used to say immune system, but we really didn't know what that meant. You know, we know where our circulatory system is. We know where our respiratory system is. But what the hell is the immune system? I mean, I never knew what it was. You hear it, but Now we know that the vast majority of our immune function is our gut and our gut bacteria. And that is a huge problem in today's world. They have shown that our gut bacteria as a species on the planet has changed pretty dramatically from just 100 years ago. We're not talking about, you know, paleo times now. We're talking about 100 years ago. And there are three big reasons for it. One, the way overuse of antibiotics, not only in the medical system, but in our food system. Animals are force-fed incredible amounts of antibiotics now. And if you're eating factory-farmed meats and dairy, you are getting incredible amounts of antibiotics every day when you eat. And when we talk about good gut bacteria, we talk about probiotics. These are antibiotics.
Right.
They kill everything in your system. That's really bad. So that's one area we have to overcome. And the only way I know to do it is you've got to eat higher quality animal products and more organic, because the pesticides and herbicides that are put on conventional crops can also wreak havoc with your gut bacteria, because they're designed to kill things. That's their whole purpose. Chlorine in city water. Chlorine is designed to kill bacteria. So now you think about our entire food supply, from the animal side to the plant side to the water we drink. It all has compounds in it now that kill bacteria. That's not good. So you've got to address that. You have to drink better water. You have to eat better animals. You have to eat better produce, organic, pasture-fed, local, raw. And I know that's not easy, especially when you're on the road, but you've got to work towards that. You know, if you've never eaten a pastured animal before and you order one piece of meat, well, that's one piece of meat better than what you were doing before. So start slow. It doesn't have to be an all or nothing. It doesn't have to be, oh, well, this is all I can get. It's not. When you have the opportunity, when there's a farmer's market, when there's a natural grocery store nearby, get as much organic and pasture-fed as you can. That's the first reason. The second reason is our overuse of antimicrobial, anti-germ, anti-everything. We hand sanitizers, bleaches, cleaners, wipes. I mean, we sanitize everything to death. That's not good. We need to get bacteria to build our immune system. If we sanitize everything, our immune system, it's like a muscle. It never gets used. And then when there is an infection or a bacteria present, we're wide open to it. Our immune system has not been worked out because we sanitize everything. So one of the really good books on this topic, I'll have to go look up the title. I know the whole message of the book, and I just drew a blank on the title. But her whole motto, she's a gastroenterologist, and she's seen all the trouble caused by this. Her whole motto is, live dirty, eat clean. And that's the idea of, don't be so worried about sanitizing your entire life. Live dirty, but eat clean. Eat really high quality meats and produce and water. So let me get to a break and I'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about that. I think I said there were three reasons and I covered two: our food supply and our overabundance of cleaning and sanitizing everything. Stick around, we'll be right back. Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. My co-host is Kim Cockerham. This is Destination Health. I'm talking with Karen in Wyoming about boosting your immune system. And first, I'm talking about all the things we do today that wipes out our immune system, which is primarily our gut bacteria. And those are two big ones. The third one is that our typical diet is very high in the stuff that feeds bad bacteria and very low in the stuff that feeds good bacteria. So if we want to improve our immune system, we need to eat clean, high-quality, pastured, organic foods as much as possible. I know you can't do it all the time. I don't even do it all the time, but I do it as often as I can, and I think about it. You need to stop sanitizing your whole life and live a little dirtier. And third, you need to look at the macronutrient balance in your diet. Now, if you're on a ketogenic diet, I said that the ketogenic diet at least starts you in the right direction because you've gotten rid of grains and processed foods and sugars. And those are the things that feed the bad bacteria. But if all you've done is start a ketogenic diet, you've at least stopped feeding the bad bacteria, but we have to do something to stop wiping out the good bacteria, and we have to start populating the good bacteria. Are you with me so far?
I am with you so far.
Okay. So we know what not to do. We know how to avoid wiping out all of the bacteria, good and bad, because we can't do that. We have to expose ourselves to all the bacteria and then create an environment in our body that favors the good bacteria. So stay away from all those things I just said because they'll wipe out the bad bacteria. Now we have to start populating with good bacteria and feeding it. So I've been doing this a year, and I keep adding a little bit, but I can tell you there is almost never a day that goes by that I don't eat a fermented vegetable, drink a fermented drink of some sort, kombucha mostly, and eat some yogurt, and take a good high-quality probiotic. Four different things I do every day to make sure I've got enough good gut bacteria going into my body. We still don't know a lot about this. We do know that the many, many different strains is better. The more strains we have of good bacteria, the better we're going to be. And all of those four things I just talked about provide different strengths. So I do all four every day. Well, I didn't start off doing that. You know, I started off eating some fermented vegetables, and then once in a while I would have a kombucha, and then maybe have a yogurt here and there, and I'd try to take a good quality probiotic. I mean, that's probably the easiest thing for anybody to do. Get a good quality probiotic and take it every day. Fermented vegetables are pretty simple.
What's a good
kombucha you can buy?
What's a good quality probiotic?
There's two places I would go and look, and there's so many different formulas. And again, because we don't know, when I say good quality, there are two criteria you're looking for. Different strains, like the one I take has 13 different strains. The commercial probiotics you see advertised on TV usually have one, maybe two. The good high quality have 7, 9, 15. The more strains, the better. The more live cultures, the better. Like I think the one I'm taking now has 120 billion cultures a day. The stuff that they advertise heavily has 5 billion, which sounds like a lot, but it's really not when you look at the better quality. So look for a lot of different strains and look for a lot of active cultures. Those are the two criteria. Beyond that, I've taken 4 or 5 different name brands. I don't know how to tell the difference. If you're getting enough different strains and there, it's a good quality, lots of cultures, you'll be fine. But, and I know that's the easiest one because everybody could stop today and buy a probiotic and start taking it. And you should.
Right.
But the others are more important. We know that when you get your probiotics from real fermented foods, it's better than getting it in a capsule. So look at fermenting foods. Very, very easy to do. Buy kombucha. I know it's expensive, but so is getting sick and going to the doctor. Good, high-quality yogurt. Now, that will get the probiotics into our body. Now we need to feed them and create the environment that they need to thrive. And that is an environment low in sugar in processed food, which the ketogenic diet already gets you that to there. This is where I talk about after you get to your ideal weight, lightening up a little bit on the carb restriction and eating more whole vegetables, some raw, some cooked, because that's the fiber that the good bacteria need to thrive. Eating the yogurt, which can be very high in carbs, but not getting so freaked out about it. Drinking kombucha, which many times is high in carbs. But lightening up a little bit on the carb side, but making all of your carbs count. So sweet potatoes, lots of nutrients, lots of fiber. Kombucha's got the, you know, good probiotics. High-quality yogurt's got the good probiotics. Don't worry about those carbs. Eat them because they're good for you. They will feed the gut bacteria. And when you populate and create an environment for that good gut bacteria, you won't get sick anymore. Humans are not designed to be sick. Most wild animals never get sick. We should.
Right.
We've just compromised our immune system so bad over the years that we think this is normal. Kim used the term earlier today, and I loved it, the new normal. You know, our normal is being sick and not feeling good. And that's just not right.
Okay. Can you overdo it on the probiotics?
Not that
can
I
you
can
take
tell.
Too much?
There is one case you should be a little leery of is just in the beginning, go easy. And the reason for that is you are, especially if you are having immune system problems, you're getting sick a lot, you are probably overrun with bad gut bacteria. And if you overwhelm the system early with good gut bacteria, it kills off the bad, and that the bad dead bacteria can kind of flood your system and wreak a little bit of havoc. It's not going to kill you. It's not going to give you cancer. It's just you're not going to feel all that great. So in the beginning, start with maybe one probiotic capsule a day and a little bit of yogurt and a little bit of fermented vegetable. And then just slowly work your way up. But once you've kind of populated with good gut bacteria, I think it's almost impossible to overdo it. Once you've created the environment, balance tends to work pretty naturally.
Okay. One other thing is I've noticed that I've been getting, since I've cut out the sugar and I drink a lot of water, that I have a lot more urinary tract infections.
Again, bad bacteria and bad yeast. So we talked a lot about bacteria. Yeast kind of gets thrown in there. It's a living organism. Candida is very common, especially with women, and it causes a lot of urinary tract infections. So everything you're telling me is pointing to the fact that you've got gut bacteria that you need to get a better balance.
Okay.
Yeah, and Kevin, can I add on the yeast part? Because that can, the doctor had gone through, that can line the insides of your intestine, Karen, and that takes longer for your body to get rid of. And the one good thing is if you stop sugar, you're not feeding it anymore. So that can just take a little bit longer for your body to rid itself of, too.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Yeah, Kim, I have to say that, you know, my childhood growing up, I was sick a lot. I got everything every year multiple times. I was sick a lot growing up. In my adult life, since I've kind of taken more charge of my own health, as I get older, I seem to get healthier as far as not getting a lot of colds, and I haven't had the flu in, my God, over a decade. And this last year, being, you know, very ketogenic, really focusing on, you know, good gut bacteria, really focusing on, and I love this phrase, live dirty, eat clean. It just, it kind of says it all. And that's how we used to live. You know, we used to live in the dirt. We used to live outside. We used to not wash and scrub and sanitize everything. And, you know, especially people living on farms. So since I've been doing that, there have been a couple of rounds this year where everybody I came in contact with was sick. And I was in close personal contact, you know, a lot. Never even got the slightest bit of a sniffle. So I know that when you get your gut bacteria in balance, it will strengthen your immune system. And there's a tremendous amount of evidence for that now. Stick around. We'll be right back. Kevin Rothman. All right, a quick heads up here. We're heading into the final segment of Destination Health. So I see a couple more questions up on the board. We'll get to those. We have some questions lined up for the second hour, but if you are just joining us, I will tell you right now, second hour is wide open. You can ask anything you want, any topic. And if you press 1 on your phone right now, the question, a comment, a topic, I promise we'll get to you in the second hour. Calls right now are a little light. All right. So let's. So at the end of this segment, I'm going to say goodnight, goodbye, all that stuff. Don't hang up because we're going to come back and we'll do that second hour. So here we go. Welcome back. We're down to the final segment. I'm Kevin Rutherford. My co-host is Kim Cocker here, and we're going to get to a couple more calls. Kim, two more things I wanted to talk about. You know, unfortunately, if you show up at the doctor right now and you are sick, cold, flu, all those normal symptoms, what do doctors tend to do and what do we tend to expect them to do?
Diagnose and prescribe.
And what will they prescribe more than likely when we're sick with like a cold or the flu?
Yeah, you know, antibiotics.
Antibiotics. And the problem is most of those will not respond to antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
Antibiotics don't fix they don't fix colds. It really can't fix the flu. There are things like strep throat. There are some viral infections that can be cured by antibiotics, but we've gotten to a system where the doctor doesn't do a test and wait for the results to come back to see if it is something that would respond to antibiotics. They just prescribe them because people expect them. We created some of the problem ourselves, and doctors make money prescribing drugs, and drug companies are happy, and they push doctors to prescribe more drugs. The problem is, after everything I just described, that our immune system lives in our gut, and we need good gut bacteria, and then we get prescribed an antibiotic which wipes out our gut bacteria. That's insane.
Yeah, you know what? I was really fortunate with and that's why I brought up when we talked before about medical, that I have a doctor that kind of put the halt on that, my family doctor back in Ohio, where I was in the habit where I just give me an antibiotic, just give me a prescription.
You know?
I didn't even want to go in sometimes. Yep. Can you just call me a prescription? And they stopped it. It was a family, like I said, a family practice. It took me a while to appreciate that. And now looking back, I'm very grateful that they put the halt on it. I mean, like even ear infections.
Good for them.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. And we kind of got to, you know, like I said, if your doctor doesn't do that, then you got to find another or, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So And then the other thing, Michael, my son does a ton of reading, and he just reminded me, you know, when we talk about, you hear this term, and I'm not sure everybody understands what it means, an autoimmune. You know, we hear autoimmune diseases. And what an autoimmune disease means, and there are lots of them, and they are growing rapidly. What it means is that your body's immune system, which is what we're talking about right now, keeps getting ramped up because of all kinds of reasons. Once you ramp it up, it's hard to turn it down. And it runs out of things to attack, and it starts attacking your own body, your own system, your joints, your intestines, and it creates havoc. So one of the ways we know that it has a lot to do with the living environment and the bacteria is there is absolute charts that show people living in cities have a much higher incidence of autoimmune diseases, and they're not contagious. So it's not like you catch an autoimmune disease because you're living closer to other people. They happen in the city because the city is a cleaner environment when it comes to natural bacteria as compared to farms and even suburbs where kids get out and roll in the grass and play in the dirt. And in cities, you don't see a lot of that. And because people do live in closer quarters in cities, they tend to sanitize more often. And there's a clear pattern of autoimmune diseases growing much faster in cities because of that.
Interesting.
Let's get to some phone calls. We're going to head off to Ohio. Gary, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kim and Kevin. Say, I do an MS bicycle ride almost every year. I've got over 20-some years under my belt doing it. I've been on the ketogenic diet. Of course, I fell off a few times. That's why I decided not to go home as often. And I have this MS bicycle ride coming up in June, and I'm trying to figure out what can I carry with me because everything that they have at the stop, the only thing that I can have at any of the stops is water because everything else is sugar or carbs. And so I'm trying to figure out what kind of food should I carry with me.
Yeah,
Kim,
those
stuff
like a buffet. Yeah, you know what, Gary, you're actually gonna love this because I used to when I went on a ride, that was just to load up the stuff I needed. I had it in my pouch thing on my bike. I had it in the back of my bike jersey. I had all the stuff I had with me. I had my watch going off at a certain time to drink my fluid I had in there. That was it was a Hammer product. I was trying to remember what it was called, but what you might find, and I still encourage you to, you've got to train this way too, to test it out and to have the confidence in it. But what you find is that you will not need that much. First of all, water should be the only thing that you would need to drink unless you're a heavy sweater. You might need some salt in the water. I also use Noon sometimes, the Noon tablets. I'll take those. But what I have found on my runs, I haven't gone on any long bike rides lately, but I had a 12-mile run this last weekend, and halfway through I did take a Justin's almond butter has little packets, and they're real handy to take with you. The only challenge I find with that is you need a lot of water sometimes to get them down because they're a little bit harder to take. But I will also take, like, walnuts with me just to have something more solid in my stomach. But any nuts like that. But you are going to find that you are not going to need that much. You're not going to hit that, you know, that wall, that type of thing where you've got to constantly be replenishing yourself. But absolutely do some training with it now while you can before June.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it's a 2-day bicycle ride. It's 75 miles a day.
Yeah.
So I need something day and from Duluth back to Blaine, Minnesota.
Nice. Yeah. So you will have to, like I said, you know, don't let yourself get dehydrated still. And, you know, if you're a sweater, I'll put some salt in it just a little bit. But try that and see. You'll actually be shocked. I almost forgot to take something and it was just a backup. I don't have that, you know, that necessity to have to carry everything with me anymore. But there's some good books that Art and Science of Low Carb Performance by Dr. Steve Finney. That's a great one. And the movie we had shared, Run on Fat, gives an idea of the people that couple that did the rowing trip to Hawaii, you know, different stuff they packed to have with them as well. But you're gonna be really, really excited to see how you can do this just running. I'm sure you'll be fat adapted and be able to roll.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Way. Yeah, because I was at about 185, 186 pounds. Right now I'm probably 168, 170.
Wow.
I was down as far as 164. I felt really good. I wanted to get that. My goal was 160, but then I plateaued. And then, of course, you know, when I go home, you know, I like to have a beer or two when I go home. So I just don't go home as often anymore.
Aw, that makes me sad.
The other thing to try that I found is when I trained, and I wasn't doing long distance, but I was doing high intensity, that if I would train in a completely fasted state, well, somewhat completely, I would have a bulletproof coffee, that there was almost zero hunger at all throughout the whole training, and usually for almost 2 hours after I trained, there would just be no appetite, no hunger. If I ate and then waited an hour or two and trained, I would notice that I was more hungry. So you might want to experiment with when you're training for this or getting ready. Do it in a fasted state and see how long you can go without eating. And drink the water, and like Kim said, if you need to, put a little salt in it.
Okay. That's kind of funny. A lot of times I don't even do any training. I just jump on the bike, throw my bike in the truck and head up. But I carry my bike now in my truck, so you know when I get to the southern states, I'm actually able to go riding and stuff. So
that's
yeah,
great.
Well, just so you know,
oops, sorry.
There's
a recipe I'll post
Kim
on the.
Mentioned. Go ahead.
I do that to you all the time, Kevin. I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
There's a recipe I'll post on the Facebook page that's in Dr. Rosedale's book. It's called Nutola, but it's just a mixture of some nuts and almonds that you bake it with some ghee or coconut oil. That it's a nice breakfast you could have with some berries and heavy cream on it, too, just to have something to get started.
Yeah, the other thing you can do, Google fat bombs. Fat bombs are usually just high-density recipes that, you know, you can usually carry, and they're high in fat, high density. There's a lot of them are built around nuts and nut butters and coconut oil. And so just so you know, that couple that Kim mentioned, when they did that rowing across the Pacific, they had to carry 585,000 calories with them.
Wow.
Yeah, that's kind of a crazy number.
I don't think I'll need that much.
There's the music. We've got to get out of here. Kim, thanks as always. Great stuff. So excited. You've got Jimmy Moore coming to join us at the CMCs, the author of Keto Clarity. We'll see you next time. Be safe. Be profitable, be fit and healthy, always be the hard work, and master the journey. Kev Russell. All right, everybody, we are getting ready to do a second hour here. So let me look over the questions real quick, see what we've got. We do have a couple of questions that came in late on Destination Health. I'll try to get to those as well. Kim, do you want to stay and help me out with those?
Oh, well, thanks. I appreciate it. I'll be here. I always love the show. Or you
okay.
Got work to do.
All right. Well, see, I know. Everybody's so busy this time of year with CMC and taxes, and I feel guilty asking you, but...
No, I'll be here if you need me, so I'll be listening.
Okay. All right.
Thanks.
I'm going to put you back on hold for right now, and we are going to start the second hour. Looks like we've got plenty of questions right now. I'll keep you updated as we go. Uh-huh.
your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is Let's. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, you name it, we'll talk about it here on the air. All you have to do is pick up the phone and give me a call. We're going to get to those calls in just a couple minutes. A couple CMC announcements I want to make. We've announced these just recently on other shows. I want to keep everybody up to date. Two more new speakers this year that I'm very excited about. We've added Dan Baker to the lineup. Dan Baker is going to be kicking off the event for us on Monday. Many of you may have heard Dan speak. Dan speaks at a lot of trucking industry events, company banquets, safety meetings, seminars, truck shows. Dan's been doing this a long, long time. I have some interesting stories about Dan. He's been a big influence on my career in the trucking industry and speaking, and I am so excited. We have tried to get Dan a couple other times, and schedules just never worked out. He always wanted to be a part of the event, but schedules just didn't work out, but we stuck with it. We were persistent. I say we, that means Lisa. And Lisa pulled it off, and she's got Dan Baker coming this year, so that's very exciting. And Kim also put in a lot of time and effort and has gotten Jimmy Moore, the author of Keto Clarity and Cholesterol Clarity, to come speak at the CMC. He'll be doing some evening sessions. Jimmy is a great example of what many of our drivers fight against. Jimmy was extremely overweight. I don't remember the exact numbers, but I believe over 400 pounds. Very unhealthy, lots of health issues. And he committed himself to finding a way to fix it. He had been through all the usual diets, all the doctors, all the drugs. Nothing was working. I think he even had a brother who died from complications from obesity. And he turned everything around with a ketogenic diet. He's got the two books, which are excellent. He's got a cookbook, which I highly recommend. He's got thousands of podcast episodes and blog posts. Just a great resource. And I'm very excited that he's going to be speaking. We'll try to get his books in there. I'm sure he'll do book signings, answer questions. And thanks to Kim for spearheading that and getting that done. I said in the last show that of all the 100-plus books I read or so, lots of really good ones. But if I had to pick one author who I think will relate to the audience the most, it would be Jimmy. So very excited about that. If you're not signed up for the CMC yet, get signed up. It's, last year I was saying, oh, you still have time. Not so much anymore. I can't believe how close we are getting. We're heading into the middle of February, so we've got like 3 months. That's it. That's going to come pretty quick. So get signed up for the CMC. So much going on this year. I'm hoping maybe to put together a webinar to kind of get an idea of what to expect. But this year we have something for everybody. Whether you are just thinking about becoming an owner-operator, you're new in the industry, we have an entire week planned for you. If you've been in the industry, you're leased to a carrier, you want to make a lot of money, we have a week planned for you. If you are a carrier or would like to become a carrier, we have a week planned for you, plus a lot of extra events, parties, receptions, get-togethers, tons of networking. There are so many reasons to come to the CMC, and I'm going to finance it for you. it all it takes to lock in your spot is about $100 or so, and then you pay about $100 a month, and we make this very, very easy. So the last several years we've been sold out. We've had waiting lists. This year we have space available because we've grown the event. The last several years we've been limited to 225 people. Right now we have over 300. So get signed up. I'd love to spend a week with you in Council Bluffs, Iowa. It's May 16th through the 20th. Grab something to write with. I'll tell you how to join us. It's very simple. You can do it all yourself. You could go right to the website, see some pictures from last couple of years, read about the different speakers. You can do that at letstruck.com under the events tab. Or you can always call us. We'll explain things to you and get you signed up. 855-100-FUEL. 855-800-3835. Now, if you are in that group that is just thinking about becoming an owner-operator, I have an entire program I've put together for you called the 1-2-3 program. And step three is the CMC that I was just talking about. Step one is an ebook and an audio book that I'm going to give to you free. Step two is our audio video workbook program. It's $247. But I'm going to make you probably the best offer I've ever made on the CMC. Here's the thing. I created a webinar to explain all of this, the whole program, in a lot of detail. If you go watch the webinar, I'll tell you how to get to that in just a minute. If you go watch the webinar, I've got one coming up this coming Saturday at 8 o'clock. No matter what time zone you're in, it's going to be at 8 o'clock your time zone. We're going to be doing the webinar explaining how this program works, the 1-2-3 program. During the webinar, I'll also give you the free ebook and the audiobook. You'll be able to download it during the webinar. If you buy the audio video workbook program about how to get started, it's $247. I'll give you a $200 credit towards the CMC and we'll still finance it. You absolutely can't go wrong. There is no other program like this. And if you take this program, all three steps, I guarantee you're going to succeed. No doubt in my mind. All right. So 855-800-FUEL, 855-800-3835, or go to the website letstruck.com. Let's head off to Pennsylvania. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Great program. How are you doing, sir?
Good. What's on your mind today?
Quick question before I ask you my main question. I had you talk about the kombucha. What is that, like a drink for the probiotic?
Yes, kombucha. Yeah, K-O-M-B-U-C-H-A. And what kombucha is very ancient. It's been around a long time. It's a fermented tea. So they start with tea, black or green tea, really any kind of tea. It's fermented with, you know, earlier in the last Destination Health Show, I'll get it out. We talked about good bacteria and bad bacteria in the body, and I just happened to mention yeast as well. Well, there are good yeast and bad yeast, just like bacteria. Most fermented foods, fermented vegetables, yogurt, kefir, they have bacteria, good bacteria. Kombucha mm-hmm. has both good bacteria and good yeast. The way you, and my son actually brews his at home, so I get this wonderful homemade stuff that I love. But you can buy it in most grocery stores now. And it has good bacteria and good yeast. And it's, if you like soda and you're having a hard time breaking the soda habit, this is a good replacement because it's fizzy. But it's naturally fizzy. It's the natural fermentation that causes the carbonation. So it can be a little sweet and a little uh-huh. carbonated. So it's a great substitute for soda.
So is it in a little tea bag that you just throw it in hot water or?
No, actually you buy it already in liquid form in a bottle and you just drink it.
Oh, that's even easier.
Yes.
So how do you evaluate a good yogurt? Because I make my own yogurt. What I do is I get the plain, I use fruit, frozen strawberries and blueberries, and then I put in coconut butter because it has no butter.
Oh, perfect.
It has no fat.
That's
but,
perfect.
But it takes
so
a while.
Hold that thought, because that's part of the problem, but you're overcoming it by putting some in. But I'll come back and talk about that because that's a great topic. Stick around. Be right back. I'm Kevin Rothman. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. I was talking with Mike in Pennsylvania. I'm going to go back there. So, Mike, here, yogurt, this is actually pretty challenging. There are thousands of kinds of yogurt on the market, and almost all of them are junk. So what I look for at the very basic level is I want to, and you're doing the right thing by starting with plain, try to go one step further and find plain whole milk yogurt instead of low-fat, skim, all that other stuff. Plain whole milk, mix in your fruit, you're pretty good to go. And you want to make sure it has live cultures. It should say live and active cultures. So we don't want anything flavored. We don't want anything with sugars, with fruit that they put in. Put in your own berries and that kind of stuff. Now, that's the very basic level. What I really want to look for, the next step up, would be organic. So if I can find organic, plain, whole milk yogurt, I'll buy that. If I'm in a Whole Foods or a high-end grocery store, I'll go one step further, and this is pretty rare to find, but I'll find organic, grass-fed, whole milk, plain yogurt. Now,
I eat Whole Foods a lot. Yeah,
so look for their organic and grass-fed. If you can get all of it, that's almost as good as it's going to get. Once in a while, just because I'm fortunate to have a grocery store that I can see right now from my studio, even though it's in another state, I can look across the river and see it in Washington, they sell raw milk. It's legal in Washington to sell raw milk at the grocery store. So there's a local farmer who provides them with raw milk, and I'll go over and buy the raw whole milk and make my own yogurt. And it's really not that hard. To me, that's the ultimate. This is grass-fed, organic, raw milk turned into yogurt.
It's plain and whole milk, is that?
Yeah. So whole milk has a high fat content.
Yeah, I drink whole milk for my coffee in the morning. I don't do any of those 1% or 2%. Yeah.
Good, and you should switch that to either half and half or heavy cream. That's even better in your coffee. You know, talk about indulgence. Once in a while, I'll go buy the raw milk, and it's not pasteurized, so it separates into cream, and I'll make the yogurt from just the pure cream. That's
half and half has
more
fat.
Half and
half
has
more
fat than
whole
milk.
Vitamin D.
Right. Right, and heavy cream has more fat than half and half.
Okay, and so I just need to incorporate the probiotic stuff because I don't take any tablets right now, but my gut is fine, and I've been trying to do the ketogenic diet for a while, and it really works on me because I'm borderline high blood pressure.
Well, Well, good. I'm glad it's working for you.
Yeah. Okay. So my question with the truck. This happens only when I'm bobtailing, and it seems to have started fairly recently. If I do 45, the problem is not there. If I go 65, but my favorite speed of 55, I get a bounce like you cannot believe. It's so pronounced. I feel like I'm on one of those, what do you call them, trampolines. And
yeah, okay.
I have no idea what's going on.
Can you tell whether you're feeling it more in the seat or more coming from the front end in the steering wheel?
It's not in the steering wheel, I can tell you that.
Okay.
It is literally in the seat in the cab.
Yeah, and that's common when somebody tells me that they have a bounce when they're bobtailing, not when they have a trailer. It is almost always rear suspension and tires. But I ask just to make sure. So two things. One, do you have wide singles by chance?
No, I have
okay.
Michelins, but they are all duals.
Okay. So one of the potential problems could be ride height. When you've got a leveling valve that might not be working when there's not a trailer, it's not working properly. And when that level gets off, you can get this. But more than likely, you've got a wheel assembly tire out of round, not necessarily out of balance, or it could be both. It could be out of balance and out of round. So
you know,
out of round is pretty easy to check. We can just jack it up, put a runout gauge on it, and check it.
You know, that now that you mentioned the leveling valve, I was parked at a Flying J a couple of weeks ago, and it was on a decline, and I woke up like 2 hours later to go out, and I had lost all the air. And I went and parked on a level ground, and I never lost any air the whole night.
Yeah,
so,
that could be a clue then that it is the leveling valve we need to be looking at. And the way they will test this is you have to find a dealer who really understands drive angles. There are a lot of shops that just think, oh, you can just, you know, I'll just adjust the leveling valve. Well, there's a very precise way of doing it to get the correct driveline angle, and we measure that angle to know that the leveling valve is working. So you measure it with the trailer and a load on, then you re-measure it again with the trailer and the load off, and it should be the same. That's the whole point of the leveling valve. Since we're in vehicles that could go from no weight on the fifth wheel, bobtailing, to, you know, 34,000 pounds on that fifth wheel when we're fully loaded, we have to have a system that can change the ride height based on that weight. That's what the leveling valve does. And if the leveling valve can't keep that consistent, then your driveline angle gets off, and it can cause that bounce, and it can do damage to the driveline.
Oh, boy. Now, what would be an appropriate shop to troubleshoot this properly? What kind of shop would you best help with?
Primarily, I would – do you go through Kansas City at all?
I'm local right now in Pennsylvania. That's the problem.
Yeah, you could call MD Alignment and ask them for a referral in Pennsylvania somewhere near you. I would start with an MD Alignment shop. Good truck dealers. You could call some truck dealers. Question, you want to talk to the service manager and say, look, I think I have a driveline angle issue, a leveling valve. Do you guys know how to measure the driveline angles? And if he hesitates and hems and haws, then they probably don't. If he says, sure, we do that all the time, we'll bring it in, we'll measure it, then I would give them a shot.
Okay. Appreciate your help, sir.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to Georgia. Steve, well programmed.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. Kind of give you a background. I was the one that come out of a lease program. Last year, a terrible lease program where my net profit was 13 cents a mile, and I'm leased on with Landstar. Yeah, yeah. Now, you know, and I called you one time about the, you know, how to do for Texas taxes, and you told me to take 9% of my gross and put it in savings, for taxes, and I have been doing that from the start of the year. And now my question is now about taxes. I heard on another show, on another program, you was talking about Social Security benefits. Can you break that down as of what, you know, how much should I send to the federal, how much should I send to the state, and how much should I contribute to Social Security? Because
I'm going to make it easier than that, because I think the way they described it probably confused a lot of people. If you come to me, and I'm your tax preparer, and I do your tax, and let's just say I'm doing your tax return for last year, and you're self-employed, you're an owner-operator, and I get all done with your tax return, and I say, Steve, you owe the federal government $5,000. You paid in some estimates, but you had a great year. You need to write them a check for $5,000. That's all I'm going to tell you. I'm not going to tell you, Steve, you need to write them a check for $1,500 for Social Security and $400 for Medicare and $3,000 for income tax. We don't do that. Mm-hmm. We just, when you're self-employed, you pay one tax. It goes to the IRS. Mm-hmm. And you could pay another to a state, but don't worry too much about that. When we say you owe the federal government X, or if we say, when I say set aside 9%, I'm covering all of those taxes. That's Social Security, Medicare, and income tax all in one.
Oh, okay. 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 Well, can you explain to me how the Social Security tax, I mean, how to estimate on what to send Social Security?
Yeah, it's that, use that same 9% of gross. It's all combined. But, mm-hmm. I mean, I can tell you what the Social Security rate is. But I think it would confuse you more than anything. See, the problem with the rate and the reason why it will confuse you is because the rate would only get paid on your net income. That means we have to calculate everything, depreciation, per diem, all kinds of things to get down to a net. Then we could apply that rate. But what I've done is made it easy. I just say, look, take the gross. Take 9%, and that will cover your Social Security, Medicare, income tax, all of it. Does that make sense?
That makes a whole lot of sense. Thank you so much, Kevin.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. I'm going to get to a break. We'll be right back. Stick around, Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. We're going to head off to Texas. Lawrence, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Kevin? Can you hear me?
Can I help you with today?
Oh, my God. I got basic questions, so I'm hoping you got some guys out there like me. first of all, I don't even believe I'm on this radio station with you. I've been listening to you for about couple of years now, but it's only on the podcast because I work some strange hours, so I'm always missing the show. And
okay.
I understand that you tell me that me and other people, and I guess other people just not listening, because I just heard one show from you about a couple of days ago where the guys, all in one show, two guys called and just scared the hell out of me. One guy said he did 65,000 miles a year, and he spent like $30,000. And you say, you know, you be nice to people. You tell them, I tell y'all, stay away from these trucks that are like 2004 or something like that and from now. So
right.
what I'm asking you now is, because you, I mean, that one episode really scared me. So if I was to go for an older truck, like, do you have like a kind in mind that I should just try to rebuild, a freight line or what kind?
Yeah, let me give you a kind of couple. Here's the good news. If you stick with anything older than 2003 and you make it aerodynamic, then everything else isn't all that critical. You know, you could have lots of different truck models, a couple of different engines, different transmissions, different rear ends, and none of those things are going to be big enough that it's going to cause you any problems or put you out of business. See, when we look at guys buying these 2010 trucks and things go wrong, that truck can literally put them out of business. So I'm glad that you're scared. It's good to be a little scared. And those are things to be scared of. But you don't have to be scared of buying a 2000 truck and, you know, you got a Cummins and you hear me talk about Detroit. That's not going to matter much. So let's go through some of the – I'll go through my absolute favorite. Everybody has to have a favorite, so I have mine. My favorite truck, 99 Volvo. I just love that model year. 99 Volvo with a 12.7 60 Series Detroit and a 13-speed. And I don't even care about the rear ends. If it has 355s, 370s, that'd be outstanding. If it has 390s, I can live with it. So that is my favorite truck. And I'll tell you the reasons why. It's aerodynamic. The quality on that Volvo is outstanding. So the 99s, and I just sold one. I had one because it is my favorite truck. The quality, the interior on that truck looked like new. The finishes everywhere held up really well. Things didn't rattle. There wasn't a bunch of stuff on the interior broken and worn out. So I love the quality. They're quiet. They ride nice. And with a Series 60 Detroit and a 13-speed, I'm just happy as can be. But you could also be just as successful with a late 90s, early 2000 Freightliner FLD with, I'll give you three engine choices. Stick with a 60 Series Detroit, a Cummins N14, or a Cat. Any one of those three engines, you're just going to be fine. Any aerodynamic truck, you'll be just fine. Whether it's a Volvo, a Freightliner, a PACCAR product, Peterbilt or Kenworth, doesn't matter. International, I don't care. You'll be fine. Any truck model that you like that's aerodynamic, that gives you lots of choices, in any one of those three engines, and honestly, if it didn't have a 13-speed, if it had a 10, so what? You'll still be fine. Does that help?
Well, I'm very new at this, and you were speaking Spanish for a second, but I'm going to go see this on – I'm going to go listen to this on the podcast. But another question is I want to invest in some of your products. Already, is it too early for me to do the thing you see? You have a stop holding the steering wheel and start driving your business, something like that?
Yeah.
Is it too early?
No, it
I
is.
Don't have it, and I want to start it next January.
It is never too early. It is never too early for that book. Like, if somebody were in truck driving school, I would recommend they listen to that book.
Okay, great. Great. And it was... Oh, something else I know I ain't going to want to hear from you because I listen to you all the time.
Okay.
By January, I may have about 18,000. Any suggestions on how should I handle it? I got great credit. Well, not great. I don't know what they call great. I don't have an 800, but I have over 700.
Oh, that's excellent.
So I don't know if... how should I handle the 18,000? Keep that in the bank in case something happens to an old truck.
Here's why. That's good thinking. But let me explain why there's a better way of doing this. Let's just say that for you, I would recommend you keep your truck budget under 15,000. There are lots of good 15,000 and under trucks out there. They're all over the place. I can find them all day long. So if you had 18,000 in the bank, and we find a $15,000 truck, let's say we go right to the top of your budget, I would recommend that you walk in and write them a check for $15,000, every penny of the truck, don't borrow a penny of it. You'd have $3,000 or so sitting in the bank left over to do your other stuff and get going. The beauty of this business is if you put that truck to work today, you'll have a check in less than 2 weeks. And you can take advances before then. And you just said yourself, you've got good credit. So here's why I like to do things this way. If you left your money in the bank and borrowed money to buy the truck thinking, well, if an emergency happens, I have cash. But if an emergency doesn't happen, and it's more likely not to happen, then what happens is your money is sitting in the bank earning less than 1% interest, and you're paying 12% interest to somebody else to borrow their money for no reason. Instead, use your cash. If something goes wrong, horribly wrong, then you go borrow the money because you'll still be able to. You have good credit.
Right.
You can go get a couple
right.
of credit cards if you want. Yeah, so
right.
I'm not against borrowing money, but I'm against borrowing it until I absolutely need it. If I have cash, I'm going to go spend my own cash first.
Okay, now here's an important question. I heard what you just said just now, but like you said, there's a lot of good trucks out there, 12, 15,000. Are these trucks that I'm able to maybe at least drive for 2 weeks?
No, not that I'm aware of. You're going to have to buy
right.
it. You might find somebody. I mean, I never say never. You might find somebody that would let you rent
right.
the truck, or sometimes insurance can be an issue. You can't really go pull freight because we got to figure out. But that's not to say it can't be done. Anything can be done. It's not common. But honestly, these $10,000 and $12,000 and $15,000 trucks, I don't worry too much about them. I mean, we want to do some basic, you know, we're always taking a risk when we're buying a truck, but we're not taking tremendous amounts of risk. So, you know, it's part of being in business.
So, I'm sorry to hold you up, but let's see if I get a truck.
Okay.
I mean, because I'm starting off very low, as you know. I mean, because I hear you talking about oil samples and all that. Shouldn't I try to, like, send stuff like that in for analysis?
You can.
Maybe
here's the good news. The program that you're going to go get, Stop Holding the Steering Wheel, Start Driving Your Business, covers all of that in detail with checklists. So it's going to tell you exactly what to do step by step.
Okay. Okay, good. Yeah, I talked to Bridget, so I'm definitely going to ask for her again so she'll know who I am. And she's very, very nice. Very nice over the phone. And thank you.
Good.
I appreciate all the business. I feel sorry for them guys out there who just ain't listening to you. I've been listening to you for 2 years, like I say, not live, like in the middle of the night and stuff, because I drive like at nights and stuff. After 12 o'clock?
Yeah.
And everything you're saying is making just too much sense to me. I mean, too much
sense.
Well,
good.
I told my wife, I said, you know what? What if Kevin Rutherford's stuff ain't good at $264? I'd rather lose $264 right here in my house before I lose out on thousands of dollars and stuck in the middle of somewhere in cold.
Well,
Trust me, I appreciate everything.
I have been helping people get started and watching people get started as an owner-operator for more than 25 years. I've done this a lot every day. And I have a very good track record on picking who will succeed and who won't. I'm really good at that. I'm telling you right now, you're going to succeed at this. Just keep doing what you're doing. Keep asking questions. Keep thinking. You are thinking. I can tell the difference. And I know you're going to succeed at this. You're one of those guys. I've seen it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I will
I've
do
seen
that hard
it
work, you see.
Tens of thousands of times. You are going to be good at this. I promise you. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Ruff. welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to get right back to some phone calls. Let's head off to New Jersey. Derek, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thank you for taking my call. I got a cholesterol question for you. I was wondering if I'm one of those people who have to stop the saturated fat like the butter and coconut oil, which I love to add to everything, you know. And I took some tests 2 weeks ago, and my HDL went up only 10 points from 41 to 50 to 11 points. But my LDL went up 102 points from 72 to 173. What should I stop eating the butter?
Well, hold on, because I need some more numbers. Do you know what your triglycerides are?
Yes, sir. I was going to ask you about that too. I don't know what that means. It says 156.
Okay. And do you know what your total cholesterol number was?
Was 256.
256. All right. Let me just do some quick calculating here, because the numbers themselves don't tell us a whole lot. It's really ratios that are a much better look at this. So let's go through each one of those numbers. Total cholesterol. We should throw that number out because it is meaningless. Here's why. Whoever came up with this, it must just be an idiot. Because how do you take two numbers, one number you want to be higher and one number you want to be lower? Why would we ever add those two numbers together and try to make it mean something? That's just stupid. I mean, but that's what total cholesterol is, so let's just ignore that. HDL is our good cholesterol. The higher your HDL number, the more protected you are against heart disease. HDL of 52 is completely normal, so you have good, normal HDL. Triglycerides are the fats. Tri is 3, glycer is fat, so it's the fats that are being carried through the blood by the cholesterol. That's one of the things cholesterol does. Triglyceride level of 155 is borderline. Not horrible, not excellent, it's kind of borderline. LDL of 173 on its own is considered high risk. The problem is LDL, the number, doesn't tell the whole story, because there are different kinds of LDL. There is, the way it's usually described, is there is big, fluffy LDL, which is good, and small, dense LDL, which is bad. So there are people with high LDL numbers, but it's almost all the big, fluffy kind, and then the number is meaningless, or it's good. If you have a high number and they're all small and dense, then that's a problem. So your numbers are not horrible by any stretch, so I wouldn't get too worried about them. What you might want to do is go further and have your LDL tested to find out what type it is. And then if it turns out that it's the small dense, then we might want to make some changes to your diet. But right now I wouldn't.
Oh, all right. Would you happen to know what's the name of the test? Because I don't think my doctor has any idea about that, you know.
I just drew a total blank. I don't. If you go online and Google, and you may even be able to do this, I can't remember if you can do this test mail order or not. There are some lab tests that you can do on your own, and I can't remember. This one may not be one. But if you Google LDL type test, you'll find some. And, you know, if you're concerned about your cholesterol, and it sounds like you are, and that's a good thing, nothing wrong with that, the book Cholesterol Clarity by Jimmy Moore, and it's available in audio, so you can listen to it. That's an excellent book to help you get a better understanding of this, and you'll feel much more comfortable once you hear those descriptions and the numbers. What you're looking for is a cholesterol particle size test.
Okay, got it. Particle size. All right, I'm going to do that. Thank you so much, and I'll see you at the next CMC, sir. Thank you so much.
All right, fantastic. Looking forward to it. And then you'll have a real resource to talk about cholesterol. Jimmy Moore will be there. Let's go to California. Gary, welcome to the program.
I was
Gary,
recently,
are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Hello?
No, I'm not sure what happened there. We had somebody there, and then they were gone. Let's go to Ohio. Carl, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Kevin?
Doing good. What's on your mind today?
Well, I was wondering if you guys have heard anything about veins in your legs or how this ketogenic diet will affect when you have blood clots. I just recently, last summer, went through 4 surgeries before they finally got my blood thin enough to get the blood clots out, and they had to put an artificial vein in my leg. And she told me that, being a truck driver is probably the main cause of all that. So have you, what are your suggestions? They put me on blood thinner finally. I cleaned it up.
Yeah, there are a lot of issues for people who sit a lot. Airline pilots, train engineers, truck drivers, even office workers. But for office workers, the solution is simple. You stand at your desk, you get up once an hour, you walk a little bit, it takes care of it. It doesn't take much. The problem is for an airline pilot, truck driver, train engineer, you can't stop every hour. That's insane.
Right.
But you have to
right.
try to get as much activity as you can.
Right.
Even some minor, keep safety in mind all the time. I'm always careful when I say this. Any kind of muscle movement you can do in the seat, flexing your legs, tensing your legs, wiggling your toes, moving your ankles around, a little bit of stretching, again, keeping safety in mind. But anything that causes the blood to flow in your lower extremities will make this better. So keep that in mind when you're driving and try to develop movements with your legs that you can do safely while you drive. Question about the ketogenic diet, all of the evidence shows that it is high carbohydrate diets that cause those problems you're talking about. And it's ketogenic diets that start to improve them.
Okay. All right, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. So there's so much, and yet there's so much misinformation. Our medical system would much rather just give us a drug. And I said on another show that really the whole system is designed to do. The whole system is just designed to push drugs. It's very, very profitable. We don't try to fix anything anymore. We just prescribe something. And most of the time what we're prescribing is just making things worse. All right, so I'm looking at the clock and it looks like I'm going to have to wrap this up. You know what, though? Maybe I can squeeze in one more call. Let's go to Texas. Joe, welcome to the program.
Kevin, how are you?
Doing great. What can I help you with today?
Kevin, you had a gentleman on that was talking about saving his $18,000 and purchasing a truck, and your recommendation for him was to pay cash for the truck. I'd just like to give you a little insight the way I did things when I first started 30 years ago. I was in the same boat. I had the money, and I paid cash for a truck. But what I learned later on in life was, I think I would have been better off go take a loan, because it would have given me the education on how to go about getting a loan, making payments.
Well,
Let me jump in there, because I
want to comment on that. We're probably going to run out of time. I think you're wrong. I think the way you did it was right. Why, starting a business is already risky. We know that. There are so many things that can go wrong. We want to minimize our risk. If we haven't borrowed any money, we have cut our risk down tremendously. So I would much rather see somebody use their cash and learn later how to borrow money and make payments. It's not all that tough. You borrow it, you have to pay it back. I understand what you're saying, and there could be some value there, but I don't think in this case. You're just getting started. Our goal is minimize that risk. So I get what you're saying, but I actually think you did it right. Now I think you're second-guessing yourself. You could look back and say, oh, I could have borrowed the money and been fine. But you also could have borrowed the money and things could have gone horribly wrong. That complicates everything. So there's lots of ways to skin a cat. I really prefer using cash when you have it. Just my opinion. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work. And master the journey. Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. We'll see you this weekend on the live show.